Daddy, what do you actually do all day? His daughter Leonie's question became the title of his first book, now available in English. Karl Mortier works in his talent zone combining storytelling with story drawing. Inspired by Alan Pavio and Scott Adams, he evolved over 30 years from coach to trendsetter, proving that working in your talent zone gives you energy and creativity. Enjoy listening and watching and see the magic grow.
Many people are unhappy in their jobs today. They do know what they don't want anymore, but they don't know what they do want. How does that happen? What do you do about it? Should you stay or should you go and change? And how do you manage that? In the Golden Cage podcast, experts let you discover how you can become happier at work.
Karl, welcome.
Thank you, Bernard.
Thanks for beating traffic.
No, I'm really happy to be here and happy as well that you invited me and as well that people are willing to listen to us. So I'm really grateful to be here and I only know what I know.
Yes, exactly. Well, that's why we invited you. So to get to know you a little better, with the title of your book, Help, Daddy, My Daddy is a Coach, and knowing that you're a storyteller and a story drawer, my question is, in your youth, and for me that youth is between 6 and 12, were you aware that drawing was something that went, smooth, easy, you liked it? Please tell me.
Actually, I don't remember that drawing was my first passion at that moment. What I remember from that time that I was playing school. So I was teaching.
The teacher.
So everything starts with me with teaching. And I remember a good friend of my dad saying, "One day, your son will be the prime minister," because I was good in telling, convincing people. So I remember it was an architect who came. My father is a really social guy. And your son will be prime minister. But it's a kind of a metaphor. And I had as well an uncle, Roger, who said as well, "Oh, Carl, he's always talking, always convincing people in a young age." And as I see my daughter as well, I see as well that certain talents. So we see she's good, caring, etc. So probably we might think, not putting in a certain direction, that one day I hope she will discover this for herself as well. But between 6 and 12, I was a storyteller, a teacher. If the teacher asked, who wants to do the speech, I was always the first to do that. So I got confirmed that there's a kind of born teacher inside of me. We are all born as teachers. So when you're born, a newborn, you teach people new emotions. So So we are all born as a teacher. So drawing, not really. On the other hand, I was really jealous about people who went to the drawing academy. And you have to, in my life, my youth time, I had hardworking parents and they protected us in a certain way. Okay, we were middle class and you go to your friends, must be middle class as well. So the middle class, they go to music academy. Yeah. So I got my solfège and I had to do piano. And that didn't work out for me. It was too structured. Music is really creative, but it starts with certain basic music algorithms, the language of music. But I was, I didn't like that too much. Actually, to say, I hated it. But my parents really forced it to me. They bought a piano, and instead of that, I didn't go to the piano lesson. I have to admit, my parents will listen to this, and they know that I cheated on this. So I ran away and I went to the soccer game, playing soccer. So I was really creative. I always looking for my freedom at that moment. So I went to, and it's called Gold Star Wormezeel. It's a local football club. And yes, I signed myself into the football club as a 10-year-old. So they protected me from, in a certain way. But I was a kind of jealous. And when I went from music academy, I passed the art academy. And I really asked my parents, I want to do art academy. I don't know why, but I really wanted to do this. And then they said, oh, no. This is for the blue collar. Yeah. So in Dutch, we say the hete wolle sokken.
Yeah.
And and this is what I remember. My parents worked really hard and they cared a lot. So they had lots of people caring for us. And at my age of nine, I lost one of my mentors, Michel. And that was really changing my life. It's kind of, I felt my first real loss in life as a 9-year-old. Be aware. And now I got a bit in the goosebumps.
Yeah.
What happened at that moment really determined the rest of my life. Losing a grandparent who wasn't there anymore. And it was with the best intentions that my parents gave responsibility to Michel. He took care of me. We did beautiful things. And I'm really, at this moment, still thankful that Michel was in my life and still is in my life. So there was a life-changing moment at the age of 9 when I was in 3rd primary school. He passed away while I was in a Scouts camp, and then I quit Scouts immediately. I didn't want to go out anymore in summer because you never know, something will happen again. So every time came back, nobody died. And this is really got in touch with loss in an early stage of your life, really determined.
Yeah.
And this is a bit my story between 6 and 12.
Okay. Yeah. So then you make me curious, what happens next?
What happens next? I'm in a quite protected life. So my parents brought me to boarding school in Waregem.
Okay.
So, yeah. And I was already a bit the social person, really got in touch with everyone. I protected everyone. And that means that you want to protect everyone, you get in the bullied position. So boarding school was really structured. It's the battle of the fittest.
Yeah, for sure, when you're very young.
So I'm really thankful to my parents that they put me in boarding school, but this is not what I will do copy-paste to my daughters. And this is not a beautiful memory. So it was another loss. It's not therapy. I'm really positive. It's a part of my life. I can only remember what I remember at this moment when you ask me the question. And when you connect to drawing, I remember one moment. I was in third, and my art teacher asked us to work with only the color green and create something with green. And I remember I felt free going with this green color. I see it in front of me. That's why I'm looking now to the sky. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly my art teacher said, Carl, we have, and here in the Culture Centrum of Waregem, we have a kind of expo. Can I use this in the expo? And I said, wow.
Mm-hmm.
So the first feedback I got on art was that moment. And I really remember the place with the person, that art teacher. Unfortunately, I forgot his name, but he said, I will use this for a local exposition about green. It was a theme of green. So,
how old were you then?
Probably 14. 14. So, okay. But the bullying continued, and then I changed school at the age of 16, 17, came back to my hometown. I was as well a bit the victim, how do you call it, the waterfall. So I started in the Latin humaniora, and then I dropped down to technical school.
Okay. Benoit, ik denk dat die stilgevallen is. Oké. Wel, ging langs die deur komen. Sorry, ja.
Okay. Ja, maar doe maar voor.
Het was een.
Ja, ik hoorde dat hij. Of gaat hij toch verder?
Ah, oké. Okay. Hij is verder aan het opnemen.
Oké.
Okay. Dus die pre-flip was waarschijnlijk van.
Ja, ja.
Het gewoon een nieuwe stukje maken.
Oef. Ja, geen probleem.
Can you cut this?
No worries.
No.
So. Just to have you say third grade, but how old were you then?
I think 14.
14,
14,
okay.
15 maximum, but still in that bullying period.
Mm-hmm.
And then I asked really my parents to change school, and I came back to my hometown, which was, oh my gosh, it was a boys-only school. And I came to Ypres discovering... the other beautiful part of life.
Yeah.
Yeah. But still thankful that my parents gave me all the opportunities to life.
Okay. Yeah. So then I don't know how long you went to school. So what were the next steps? I'm curious.
Beautiful. Oh, beautiful. When I was 18, I was in technical school, so it was in not technical school, it was more in the economic school, technical.
Yeah.
And so it means I didn't have to do much for school. Okay? So when I was, my two brothers and my sister, they were really handy people. They're really crafting, they did work.
Mm-hmm.
They continued the business of my parents. My sister is one of the best cook that you have in the world, according to me, and so helpful. But there was kind of a problem with that third person, their son. He's quite intelligent, but really unhandy. What will we do with him? And for me, it was quite easy to pass school. So I didn't have much school problems, only with when I was in Waregem, some with the kids, but not with teachers. With
Not with the lessons.
With the lessons, ah.
Yeah.
So my dad said, okay, you go now for your work during the holidays. And when you come back, I want you to know what to do. I was 18 and I didn't know what to do in the world. So, and then my dad asked me, when you come back from the Panne, which is a beautiful seaside city in Belgium, and I said, okay, what should I do now? And I really liked working in the restaurant, so I said, I can continue working here. So I came back and I had a plan B in my head, but I didn't dare to say that to my dad. So my plan A was, I don't think I want to continue my study. I want to go in a restaurant and work and earn money because Bart, who was my restaurant mentor, really, he was a mentor as well, taught me a lot. And he offered me a job. Come here. So I will continue, and maybe today I would be a restaurant owner in the Panne. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
Who knows the story of your life when you made other decisions? And then I will make lots of noise. My dad did like this. I have three kids who didn't study, at least I want one person in the family that studies. And don't think too much. I made the choice for you. Which is, with the positive intention of my dad, he made your path. With the best intentions. I still believe in this. So, connection to the family. But as a child you were born, you have two important needs. Connection and freedom. Connection and freedom. You're born with those two needs. You have the Maslow needs, but the basic needs are being part of something. So, and the freedom to explore.
Yeah, you need the protection if it goes iffy, and then...
Yeah. And on the other hand, so it was a kind of overcaring, which is okay. Overcaring. And I have two beautiful daughters, and I'm caring as well. Caring is one of my, and hospitality is one of my talents. We'll talk about talents later. And my plan B, you might be curious what my plan B was.
That would have been my question.
Then I said, oh my gosh, should I say my plan B instead of the choice that my dad already given? So I go back to the story. My dad said, I have a beautiful opportunity for you. You become teacher in economics. You can work for a bank. You can become bookkeeper, or you can go and teach young people. So, or you do an administration job. So for sure, you'll have a job anyway. Interesting. And then I said, okay, maybe I could say I don't want to be a bookkeeper, don't want to be a banker. Maybe I can tell him that I want to be a film director. And yes, in the summer of 93, when I got back from the Panne, I took the train to Dansaarstraat, the Ritz in Brussels.
Yes.
And this was Walhalla for me. This is the place I want to study, in Brussels. And I was sure that's my passion. And for the small story, when I'm in Brussels, I still stay in Hotel Dansaar.
Because of the memories.
Because of the memories.
Yeah, wonderful.
So it was an anchor, and it didn't mean that I didn't make that choice at that moment, that I can turn back time and have that sensation.
Very nice.
And for the small story, I didn't dare to tell my dad.
Okay.
So you don't want to hurt him at that moment.
Upset, yeah.
Upset him too much, but it was not, you don't want to be forced again.
Yeah.
And a couple of weeks ago, I told this story because I put this on LinkedIn, I think. And I said, yeah, it's on LinkedIn, social media. Now I have to admit to my dad as well. He's a
fine... all those years he never knew?
No.
Wow.
And then he said, why didn't you tell me at that moment? And then I said, Daddy, it's not about away from, it's forward to a future. And then I said, I'm happy that you made a choice for me to be a teacher, because there I could continue what I'm doing now, because next year in 2026, officially I will be 30 years of teaching. So I'm thankful. Today I can say I do 30 years of teaching thanks to that decision of my dad. Maybe he saw the talent in me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. But on the other hand, thanks to my art thinking, art doing, I'm drawing.
Yeah.
I'm making my own stories. It's not filming. That's for other talent. But I I draw storyboards.
Well, maybe. The art you're using to tell your story, I would see it this way. That is your talent.
Mm-hmm.
And whether it is filmmaking or drawing, to me, this is more the skill you need. At least that's how I would explain it.
Of course.
You have the creativity, because at the end of the day, correct me if I'm wrong, but what you do as the teacher, teaching is done the best way with stories.
It's storytelling.
It's storytelling. The Bible is storytelling. Everything in school, the smaller, the younger you are as a kid, they try to give you rules all with stories, because that's what we understand. And then you, with the heart for a creative way to bring the stories, ended up now in drawing. But I don't think, for as far as I can hear it, it's not wrong for any of you, whether it is your dad or you, but it was just trying, maybe in art or in movies, I can express my stories a certain way, but you're still expressing your stories.
Totally right. We're on the same line. We tell the same story. And it's just another way to express it.
Yeah.
So the expression of what you're doing, there are hidden talents, or it's not hidden talents, there are talents
you
underneath.
Always, yes, you have, well, they're not even underneath, but in your life, because of context and circumstances, you use different talents combined with skills and competences. And experiences. So it is not something you do all your life the same way.
Nope.
And but I think you are a person, as you said, you loved your freedom. That also means that you wanted the freedom to choose which type of talent you want to combine with your skills and your competences at the very moment in that very context. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And it's kind of, I'm drawing it here, it's make the movie of your talents.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. No, but
I like that one-liner.
Yeah, but you're always, we're all making our own story, and some can tell it, some can write it, some can draw it, and or even live it. What I mean with that is, you have some people where you would think, I don't know if this person has any talent. But then you look in their garden and they do all kinds of things where you're like, this is a masterpiece. That's their story.
That's their story.
Yeah.
It's what you show.
And if you talk to these people about their garden, you see a very colorful person.
Yes.
Where he might in the week be a very gray mouse. Yeah. He does his job just because it pays the bills.
It's kind of the gardener shows the movie of his garden.
Exactly.
Yeah.
In my first TED Talk, by coincidence, it is hero of the game.
By coincidence? Okay.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But you know what I mean. And there, the movie that yours, that's translated in my saying, it's the game. It's your, that's your game. And you become the hero of your game, meaning you, in certain way, you realize what you were dreaming about, what was always in you, that you had the freedom, as you were saying it, to express it. And I also think that it is, freedom is a strange word, because I think the thing that you add, meaning the kind of safety of your parents, that also gives you a trusted environment so that you can use your total freedom the way you see it. You have no risk. There is a safe haven for you to come home. And that's exactly right where you said you need the two. You need the safe haven.
Yes.
If it goes wrong. But on the other hand, you want the freedom to see how far you can go without going wrong.
And in the freedom, you can discover new havens.
Yes. Yeah.
So it reminds me about the book of Fast Thinking, Slow Thinking System, Daniel Kahneman.
Yeah. Yeah.
One of our favorite books, I assume. Yeah. It's you need that second system to give fruits to your first system.
Exactly. But think about being a couple. The first safe haven you have is home with your parents. But then you need the freedom to see who you want to spend your life with. And then that becomes the safe haven.
Yeah. It's a book about Esther Perel.
Yeah.
Who talks about this in her book and really recommend that one.
Yeah.
And when I turn back to the story, what I'm doing now is be aware of different talents. And it's, I read the book from Scott Adam, you know, the talent stack.
Yeah.
And that was for me an eye-opener. You don't have to be the best in one thing. You can be semi-talented, but the combinations of average talent can make a whole unique person of yourself. And that was so amazing, eye-opener for me as well. Mm-hmm. And that was as well the reason why I drew this book, I told the story in this book, is bringing, okay, I'm an average drawer, illustrator, I'm not the best. I am an average storyteller. I'm an average writer. But if I bring those three things together, I can make something unique. And this was really, the click to say, I will tell, write, and draw a book. And the real teaser was the moment that Leonie asked me, hey, daddy, I have to tell in school, do a story in school. What does my dad do for job? For the mailman, it's quite simple, with all respect. But how can you explain your daughter that you're active in learning and development as a trainer, as a coach, as a facilitator?
Exactly right. Yeah.
And then it triggered me.
Yeah. No, but it is correct that it's always a combination of your talents, but it's a combination of your talents, your skills, competences, experiences,
of course,
background,
of course.
It is complicated, and you can see people evolve from one thing to another, and the closer this all comes to the depth of your talent zone, the closer you are to your passions, and then the entire battery of energy is opened.
Of course.
And then you learn on the way, you learn that hard work then gets results. Because partly the hard work does not even feel as hard work for you because you love it. So I'm not saying that you cannot be tired, but you will endure more pain, more effort when you are there than if this is just something you're purely skillful or competent in.
Perseverance is very important in this. Perseverance is very important. It's not about I have the talent and I'm really successful. If successful is your goal and you can be successful in different way, it's like you say, it doesn't absorb too much energy. Your energy is not drained. No, it gives you energy. You love to do it. You're proud about you doing it. And you got feedback on what you're doing it. And you're aware of doing it. So awareness is very important.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my definition before we talk about talent. And it's our colleague and common friend, Luc De Wolf, who's really, gave a good definition to talent. And then behind this, You need skills. For example, receiving feedback is a really hard skill. Accepting even good feedback. Getting that positive stroke needs competences. The first time I got a positive feedback from that teacher with the green, I couldn't believe it. I was bullied, and that teacher said, I will use your drawing in a Waringham exposition. So, wow, it made me proud. And this is one of the first times that I accepted it. Feedback, positive feedback.
Yeah. But feedback comes in different ways, huh?
Yeah.
Because Luc de Wolf will definitely say that the two very first signs are when, in a way, what you're doing gives you energy.
Gives you energy.
Instead of drains energy. And second, time flies. And for me, there is a third one that is, in a way, but that's me, even more significant. And that is when people come and ask you, how did you do that? And you don't know. And I mean, you can't explain it. Because for you, it's something that goes and comes. But other people ask you, they never ask you if you do something stupid, how did you do that? They're not interested in the stupid things you do. They're always interested in if you can do something nicer, quicker, bigger than them, then they're like, how did you do that? And in a way, that's super positive feedback because they ask, because they want to know that as well. They want to do it the way you do it.
And how do you do this? Is a question I often get. So thank you for doing so. It's a kind of positive feedback. But now it realizes you need active listening as well.
Of course.
Be alert for people giving you feedback. Then you can build on your talent. So curiosity is one of the basic skills to build on your talent. And curiosity is active listening. For me, it was, if I got feedback, Carl, you're good in drawing. I said, there are better people than me. I could have listened and said, thank you.
Yes.
For seeing it.
Yeah.
You see me. And now, thank you for seeing me. I will take this as a positive stroke, a compliment, and then I will build on this.
Mm-hmm.
So it's curiosity, active listening, and there to put that feedback into
action. Yeah, exactly right.
So talent for me is your passion in action.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I always compare it with a suit. You buy a suit and it just hangs there. Nobody knows whether the suit is okay for you or if you're looking nice with the suit, yes or no. It's only when you wear it, when you do something.
Yes.
Then people can say, nice suit, nice dress. So you need to do something with it. Luke talks a lot about that, huh? If you're a couch potato, not many people are going to say that you're very talented because you're not doing anything. You need to do things. But when you have the talent and you have passions, you want to do things, maybe even on the risk that you overdo.
Yeah, and then overdoing. And we often get the compliments on the final product.
Yeah.
And it's a really I invite people as well, see the process of doing something. It's about, and that means see the process you've been through, the process. And I really like to give that feedback to myself when I see my first professional paid drawings 10 years ago and I see what I do now. I said, oh my gosh, I asked money for that? Which is okay.
Yeah, of course.
But it's okay. I see development. And yes, it's not only about seeing the talent. It says, well, talent development. It's not something that is static. It's development. But develop means listen to the active. It's active listening to feedback. Sometimes negative feedback is as well good feedback. There's not such as a failure. It's only feedback.
Yeah.
So if someone gives me feedback, even in a, we call it, I don't like the negative feedback, but it's improving feedback.
Yeah.
Then I said, okay, I accept this as well. So accepting feedback is one of the top skills.
Yeah.
Listen actively. And although it goes through your second skin and it touches you, then ask your question, why did that feedback touch really deep my heart? Because you're passionate about it.
Exactly.
Because you love it. So your reaction, your negative reaction, which is a reflex, tells something positive about it. So there's not such as a failure. This is feedback. And behind your feeling of the negative feedback, there's always a positive intention.
Mm-hmm. And you're so right. Talking about feedback, when people talk about feedback, we talk a lot about giving feedback. But you're so right when you were talking about the listening and the observing. As much as we need to learn to give feedback, we also need to learn to receive feedback. Because too many times we feel that our ego is in danger when we get something like,
it's a protection system.
Yes, yeah. And I am lucky that I was in sport. So there you get everyday feedback. And I'm going to tell you, most of the feedback you get is, this is not good, this needs to be better, and this needs to be better. And there, if you feel that this is given in an authentic way,
yes,
with a person that means it for the good, then you need to learn to take that and say, like, well, it's better that I get confronted with the mistake here on a training ground than on Sunday in the game. Do you understand?
Yeah.
So we hear too often, oh, but they're not giving good feedback. Are we ready to receive feedback?
Yes, that's true. You can only, it's the way, the core of communication, it's not in the message, it's the feedback you receive on the message.
Yeah, yeah.
Because people said, oh, how can I formulate the best way to this person. Okay, there's no perfect way. Just give the feedback. And then calibration, we call it, look at that person, how he reacts. So learn from the feedback you give as well.
Okay, yeah. Exactly right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Plus, I give you one example. Oh, yeah, I don't know if I like to continue to work there. Why not? Well, they always come to me and they're like, oh, but you're better in this. Can you do this for me? I say, okay, so what do you think now? Or they're taking advantage of me. Why? Oh, they continue to come and give all, it's always that same type of work, and they give it to me because they say I can do it better so that they don't need to do it. I said, wait a minute. Are you sure about that last part? Because maybe you are just much better. Have you ever thought about that, that this could be a positive thing, and maybe you need to learn to say, hey, not right now, I have other priorities.
Yes.
Do you understand? So again, it's the active listening. What is exactly meant with the question or with the remark, whatever?
Or with the answer.
Yeah.
And as an NLP master trainer, when someone says, they do this always, okay, who are they?
Yeah.
And what do you mean with always?
Exactly right.
And what do you mean with doing?
Yeah.
So what are you doing? Who are they to say? And always, are there moments that they say something different? So in giving and receiving feedback, we often used general words.
Assumptions.
Yeah, which is normal. Yeah. Then we don't have to think too much.
Yeah, exactly, right.
It's a kind of brain laziness. We generalize things in our own model of the world. It's always them who this does, never do that. And that's okay.
So I want to come back a little bit to your life story.
Thank you.
So then you got in your professional life.
Yes.
But as far as I can understand, we do not know each other for a long time. But your beginning of the beginning of your professional life, and where you are now, to me, that's still quite a difference.
Oh, I started my professional career when I was 21. I worked for Uniso, a normal administration job. Thanks to my dad, he was taking care of me again. And then he suddenly said, I know a manager of a adult school, Vormingsinstitut, now it's Sintra.
Yeah.
And they are looking for a teacher. As a teacher in economics, I was as well a computer nerd. So WordPerfect, you remember WordPerfect?
Yes.
I knew this, all the F and the function keys by heart. And we did a transition from Word to, from WordPerfect to Word. So
yeah.
I really, in my final work at school, I was a really Word nerd. A word nerd and an Excel nerd.
Yeah,
all those nerdy things that made me at that moment talented in everything from Microsoft.
Yeah.
So I went to that teacher and I was thinking, yeah, he will need someone to do the Word Perfect into the Word transition. And then he said, Dirk, his name, Dirk de Deurwaarder. And Dirk asked me, Carl, your dad sent you because we need a teacher in economics for pub owners. You know, pub owner 30 years ago was regulated. So if you want to give them a spaghetti or a croque monsieur, you need a license for doing this.
Yes.
So you need a certain of economic license. Can you give bookkeeping to pub owners? I was so happy that I'm so happy that I was naive to say yes at that moment. So my first training was bookkeeping, simple bookkeeping to pub owners. We said don't generalize, but we can do some characteristics of those students. They came often a bit drunk because it was in the morning, on Friday morning. And do they really think about economics? Not at all. So I was really in the shit with my feet until my chin. And I really, really am so grateful to Dirk de Deurwaarder, because talents, you need mentors as well.
Yeah.
You need support. People who believe in you, but give you straightforward feedback. After two lessons, I went to Dirk de Deurwaarder and said, please, Dirk, please release me. And he said, no, you have the passion. You said yes and believe in yourself. And if there's something, I'm there for you, but you don't quit as a teacher. I believe in you.
Wow, nice.
21 years old.
Good for you that you had a mentor like that.
Yes. But sometimes, and now I'm proud, you need to deserve your mentor.
Not sometimes. You always need. There's a Chinese verb, huh? It's only when the student is ready that the teacher shows up.
Of course. Yeah. So that person, he could have said, in every part of my life, there's always a mentor.
Yeah.
Always a mentor. And at that moment, it was Dirk, and still is, because mm-hmm. I have you have the talent stack, I have my mentor stack.
Yeah.
And if I need an advice, I go, okay, what would Dirk say? What would Peter say? What would Philip say?
Yeah.
All people you meet, what would Bernard said?
Yeah.
So what would Luke said? These are all, you don't even have to meet your mentor.
No.
But this one, I will add a story about mentorship as well. For me, he believed in me.
Mm-hmm.
And after 2 years, economics for pub owners, come on, show up. It's a, now I feel a bit big-headed,
yeah,
but it started with a certain soul, then the ego came, and at a certain level, always put your ego and your soul in balance. So
yeah.
But I was really happy of this. So 30 years later, so in 2026, I will be a teacher for 30 years. That's why my book will be published in English as well. Mm-hmm. Help My Daddy as a Coach. Just very soon on Amazon. So really happy. So it's my first gift. A gift to the audience is that book. And then I started teaching, and I continued teaching the whole time. But what's really important for me at that moment, and you see lots of teachers who are expert, but I was not expert. I was young. So I had to be creative in creating links and do animations. First of all, to spend some time with those people. So I had to go really into methodology and exchanging and telling stories and let people story. So now it's a kind of vice versa. Lots of experts want to be a good facilitator, a coach.
Yeah.
For me, it was kind of different. And I had the skill of facilitation,
yeah,
because I didn't have the expertise yet. So for me, it's the world of a teacher upside down.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah.
I really deepened then into methodology with NLP, with Robert Diltz. I really got deep into the methodology, mm-hmm. and really hoping that I can spread that expertise in facilitating to experts who need some teaching or facilitative skills. This is one of my dreams in 2026.
Mm-hmm.
So mentorship. Do you like music, Bernard?
I like to listen to music, but
yeah, okay. But just imagine that you're in a car.
Yeah.
And what is one of your favorite music groups?
Oh, that's Led Zeppelin, Pink Floyd, Queen.
Okay.
It's that type of music.
Okay.
Rock and roll.
Rock and roll. So imagine Freddie Mercury.
Yeah.
You listen to Freddie Mercury, we go back in time, and you had those, you listen to the music on the radio, and then said, oh, maybe I could buy an LP of mm-hmm. Queen. So from the radio, you buy the LP.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I listen to the radio, I hear Bernard Moerman on the radio, I will buy the book of Bernard.
Yeah.
So you take the book, you take the LP of Freddie Mercury.
Yeah.
Then later you said, oh my, I want to see a concert of Freddie Mercury.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you say, okay, I will attend a keynote of Bernard, and I will want to be part of it. So you come closer to the person who inspires you.
Yeah.
But imagine, as a music lover, you start to play the music of Queen. You said, wow, I want to do the same.
Yeah.
Or, wow, what Bernard says, I do, word of mouth. I will continue the message.
Yeah.
So, and then a step further is, maybe Freddie Mercury sees you and said, hey, doing to be in my backing vocals, then you're on stage.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe one of your mentors asks you, hey, you were in my lessons, and I heard you were continuing my message. Let's do this together.
Yeah.
And this is what I really did in my life. I had two really global mentors, Tony Buzan.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks to Bernard.
Yeah.
Lernout.
Yes.
I met. So it's okay. Kind of one mentor opens the door for the other mentor,
yeah,
which is really important. Who is your next mentor will open the door, but always be grateful to the mentor before. So Tony Buzan, I read books, I met Bernard Lernout, and then I asked Bernard, what is mind mapping? He said, there's only one person who can explain mind mapping. That's on a Tony higher Buzan. Level is Tony Buzan. I met Tony Buzan. Unfortunately, Tony passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And then I said, okay, NLP. Wow, who's NLP? Oh, Robert Diltz. Okay, I want to meet Robert Diltz. And I went to Santa Cruz to meet Robert Diltz. And then I showed my passion about visualization. I put his NLP into action. And then last summer, I was asked by NLP University, can you co-facilitate some sessions and draw and show yourself and help groups? So I was on stage with my mentor. So very important, if you have a talent, try to reach as close as can be to your mentor.
Exactly. For me, being rock and roll, my music, believe this or not, just imagine I'm 16, 70 years old, starting and at 18, I played in first division and rock and roll was my music.
Yes.
And what was my other big thing? All the LPs in those days of Toon Hermans.
Oh my God.
And that were really my kind of mentors. Speaking in public,
of course,
and making the entire audience laugh with not even saying anything. You know what I mean? I still have hard times to not speak.
That's okay.
But you, your story resonates to me, because I loved the rock and roll music, but I admired much more those stand-up comedians.
Yeah, of course.
Because in a way, let's face it, what is nicer than make people laugh for 2 hours?
Yeah, that's what Scott Adams says as well in his book.
Yeah.
It's about what you say in combination with humor shows the best about yourself. And you can, and this is I learned from a common person we know as well, Peter Percival.
Yeah.
The best humor is the humor that you can tell about yourself.
Yes.
In storytelling. So make yourself a bit ridiculous, then you don't have to make other people ridiculous. And these are the best stories. Make fun of yourself.
Yeah. But in a positive way.
In a positive way.
Yeah.
In a vulnerable.
Yes.
In a vulnerable way. In a touchable, reachable way, because vulnerable,
yeah.
I like the word vulnerable, it's a very dangerous word, vulnerability,
yeah.
But reachable, that people can, tangible,
yes.
For, and yeah, that's why I like humor a lot. As a serious person, I really like humor.
Yeah. But, well, that's, even in, if you're working with teams, in every team, in every good team, you have clown.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're always talking about who's the leader and who's the captain. Okay. But in every team, you need a clown. And even in the Middle Ages, we understood that already.
Of course.
That you needed a clown even sometimes to get the tension out of the room with humor.
That's why Louis XIV, when he entered the streets, he had always a small dwarf besides of him. Do you know why?
Because they could make fun of him or something?
No, to hide the weakness of the king.
Exactly, because the attention is drawn.
Drawn, so...
No, makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah. So, in your career, if I see what you're doing now, which is for me unbelievable.
Yeah.
Because I need all my very few brain cells I have to stay with it and listen to your intriguing story. But then on top of that, you can draw. That to me is almost a miracle. So how should I, when did you discover that not only story drawing, but also what you're doing now, and I understand sometimes you do it as another person talks and then you kind of translate it into pictures.
Mm-hmm.
When did you figure out, one, this is what I love to do, and second, yeah, I can even make or build part of a career with it, or a full career.
It's a process, bit by bit. I earn money with doing this.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that, huh?
Nothing. First of all, this is realizing, just don't do this only for creating value. Value has its price. But it took a long time, so it took lots of self-confidence, perseverance, listen to the feedback of other people, and sometimes it's two things I want to say. It's like Pippi Longstocking.
Yeah.
I can do it because I never done it before.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but I will be doing it. Yeah,
it's a personal interpretation.
Yeah,
and secondly, sometimes it's fake it before you make it.
Yeah.
If a person sees it in you, accept it. So my first visual storyboard was a colleague asking me, "I have a big." Assignment, and it's a really difficult report I have to write. I want to support it with visuals. Can you help me? I said, yeah, of course I can help you. What's your price? I said, yeah, that's my price. But my price was one day, but I worked 4 days on it. But the result was the value. So I offered a bigger value than the price I ask. And bit by bit, value and price come in
balance.
So for me, very important. If only it's value for the value, doesn't work. When the price is too high and you don't have value, what does the client say?
Yeah, you're way too expensive.
Way too expensive. So it's a kind of coming to that position that value and price come in balance. And that's the process. Trust it. Do reflection on that. So it's process, listening, self-confidence, perseverance. And sometimes when someone gives, for example, colleagues or competitors giving you negative feedback, this is sometimes the best feedback you can get. Sometimes people, I really believe in positive intention of people. Sometimes I was too naive, but now I'm realistic as well. If someone, a competitor, says something about me to another, the message often comes back. It means, okay. It means that you're maybe a couple of steps ahead, but it's interesting to receive this feedback.
Of course.
Yeah. So keep believing in yourself and continue. And as you did with to me, is refer to that inner child from 6 to 12 years old. For example, if a competitor talks bad about you, It reminds me about being bullied 30 years ago, or at almost 40 years ago. So that inner child comes and said, okay, you feel bad. But now I have the skills to reprogram it, to reframe it. So very important is accept the reaction of the inner child in you who has less filters than the adult person that's in you. So listen to your inner child who offers without any filter the talents you have. And on the other hand, that inner child has emotions as well, listens to the positive intention of the emotions that show up at that time. Sometimes the emotions you have, the negative emotions, is the emotion of that inner child in you.
So correct.
And this is a mirror. It's the calling. The calling of the inner child.
So right. I have one more question, Carl.
Thank you.
I could read that you're in the still in the middle or towards the end of a lot of construction. So for your 30th year, there is more to come.
Yes.
There is the book in English, but can you unveil some stuff there?
Yeah. 2026. I would get a good emotion now. I survived 2025 because of a cancer.
Oh, that's, we didn't talk about that. Yeah.
And that cancer learned me or taught me your passion, your talent is that thing you want to do when you don't feel well.
Oh, that's a nice one.
So people say rest, stay on your couch, rest. And I did things that I continued projects in drawing, writing books about my cancer, and that really. And then at a certain moment, my dad and my mom invite me to the notary. And they said, Carl, and to my sister, we offer you the farmhouse. And it's like, it reminds me on the Bible about the talents. We invite you to do something with this.
Oh, geez. That's a gift, man.
A gift with lots of responsibility.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a moment that my dad and my mom said, attach yourself to that property, but you get the freedom of doing something with it, with your sister. And it's a kind of rebirth. You remember your birth, you're born with connection and liberty. It's a connection to the farmhouse and the liberty.
Yeah.
And I was always struggling, what is the best place to do my work? I had lots of places, but this is the next destiny.
Yeah.
And we were building a B&B. My sister has a really big talent in cooking and farming. And we have a bio farm that will be held. And as well, a guest house, a B&B, four rooms. And there's one wing. It's not the east wing. It's my coaching wing.
Yeah.
And whatever will happen there will be done with the best positive intention, respecting what my parents give back to us. And it's not about an activity. It's about a passion, and put a passion into responsibility.
Yeah, because that was my first reflex. You talked with a lot of love about your dad. But your dad, for everything you told me, was in charge. Now he gives the key to you. That's what I said. Wow, that's a gift.
Yes.
Congratulations.
It's not about the gift of a farm.
No.
It's the gift of responsibility. And
the trust, the faith you proved to be worth. Here it is. Very nice. Very nice. Carl, I thank you so much. This is a great talk. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Bernhard.
So, Carl, thanks for this ending, but it's not ended yet.
No, it starts. Because
you made me so curious. please, let's go from storytelling to see what the story drawing brought us.
It's, yeah.
Help, my daddy is a coach,
and then we have the golden cage.
Yeah.
And then we talked about make the movie of your talent and the hero of your own movie.
Yeah.
We talked about Scott Adam, the talent stack.
Yeah.
That helped me to develop the book. And I really like how do you do this? It's a kind of feedback, and receiving feedback, we saw it's a really good skill.
Yeah.
What I really liked as well is reach out to your mentor. Try to be a sight on the stage. So mentorship in talent.
Yeah.
And I really like it about the importance of the
humor.
Of the humor of the clown in you. And then really thankful for the last insight is receiving the key of responsibility. And it resonates, the key of responsibility. So for sure, this is a title for one of our next books. So Help, My Daddy is a Coach. And yeah, I'm really thankful that I could draw and give this to as well.
Yeah.
It's, in French, you would say it's a croquis.
Uh-huh.
It's not a final one.
No, but
at least it shows some things we were talking about during the...
Definitely. This will always be remembered and in a place that I can see it.
Yeah, I will sign it for you.
Oh, thank you so much.
And then I'll give you this key of responsibility.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Golden Cage podcast. If you want to break out of the Golden Cage, then read the book by Bernhard Moerman, Break Out of the Golden Cage. If you have any questions, visit our website breakoutofthegoldencage.com.